next up is Power Players.
Hey folks, it's Ken Watmore with Power Players Radio, the radio ministry of 1615.tv. Today we've got another audio grab from one of our television shows. It's a new show and part of a new series called American Legacy. And our first guest for the American Legacy program is Sharm Sherman, Iowa basketball coach, player also, and just a fantastic guy. Now leads Basketball Club International. This guy is awesome. What a great guest, a great friend to the ministry, and I absolutely enjoyed my time with him, and I think you will too. It's an hour-long show. Sit back and enjoy as we get a chance to talk to Sharm Sherman. Hey, thanks for joining us at 1615 TV. This is Ken Watmore. I'm your host. And today we have a great guest to launch a series called American Legacy. Our guest today is Sharm Sherman. Sharm, thank you for taking time out of your day to join me today.
I'm looking forward to spending some time.
It's going to be good. I really appreciate you coming because you've been one of those guys who I've kind of looked at in the idea of legacy. And from playing sports, coaching sports, having a family, and then being successful at a ministry opportunity now in sports as well, you truly are leaving a legacy for us. Let's start back a little bit, though. Let's not go right into what you're doing now. Let's start from where the natural progression would begin, and that's as a kid. You've got a story that you tell to grade school kids to intro that, and let's go ahead and let you do that.
Well, when I talk to grade school kids, for instance, I'll start off, and at my age, you know, you've got to do something to kind of let them realize that that's not just an old guy talking to them, that try to relate to them a little bit. And I never, certain things in your childhood that you really remember. And I remember at Christmas time in Rock Island, Illinois, my dad knew the basketball coach, and they would have a practice over Christmas time. The schools closed, and my dad would take me over, my brother and myself, and we used to stand under the basket and just grab the balls as the high school kids were shooting and throwing them back out to them. And I remember very distinctly just saying, if I could ever play for Rock Island High School, if I could ever play on that floor, I would have died and gone to heaven, because I don't think anything could have been better than that. And then as your life progresses, well, you find out, and all of a sudden, you get a chance to play for the high school, and then you become a pretty good player. And then you get some college recruiting letters and calls and that. And so, but I always go back, because it started right when I was young. And I tell these kids, you never know what the Lord has in store for you, but you start small. And what is big to you is your world is much smaller, and it's so gigantic. And then all of a sudden, the world becomes bigger and bigger and bigger.
Now, that speaks to something, and that makes me ask you a question about leadership. You obviously have been given, blessed with the gift of leadership, and that's what led you to be a great coach and a great player in college, and now, again, doing what you're doing with BCI. But when you were in high school, did those memories make you a leader on that team because you had a fondness for where you were at?
Well, I think God gave me, basketball intelligence, football intelligence, baseball intelligence. I knew the game real well. I think I was a good athlete, but I wasn't a great athlete. But I knew the game well enough that I could combine the athletic ability that I had. I knew what I could do and what I could not do. In fact, I was an all-state football quarterback, and I could have played football at Iowa. I was offered a football and basketball scholarship at Iowa. And it was more probably because my knowledge of the game, and if you know the game, you are going to be a leader. Because there's a lot of athletes who just get by on their raw talent, instincts, you know, just reaction. And yet, if you're not as good as some of those guys, then you have to use your head. And that kind of goes along. You become kind of a leader because they know that you understand the game.
Yeah, that's right. And it does take smarts. I mean, to really excel at a sport, some people are definitely given size and just raw strength and power. But really, the guys who carry it on forever are really, they have the smarts for it too. You know, so you were offered a basketball scholarship and a football scholarship. Obviously, you took the basketball scholarship to Iowa. 1952, you began playing there. And then through your career there, Big Ten champs twice and made it to the Final Four both those times. Talk to that a little bit.
Well, back in 1952, I was offered a scholarship at Iowa. As I said, I couldn't play basketball or football. My real thinking that I could make it in the big time was baseball. Hmm. And the football, I couldn't play football and baseball because of spring practice.
Right.
And so therefore I chose basketball because I could go play baseball as soon as the basketball season was over. In fact, one time when we played in the Final Four, we came back, it was on a Friday night, and we came back into Iowa City on Saturday and got back, flew back in the morning. They had a little parade and celebration for us. And I had to be at the bus to go down to Arizona within a half hour after I got back to my room. Wow. And so therefore your seasons really, really overlapped.
Yeah. So what, let me ask you, what kept you out of baseball from that point? Did you play all through college?
Yes. Yeah, I started in center field for Iowa for all 3 years. And I was thinking about signing a pro baseball contract. I had a chance to sign. But my junior year, Bucky O'Connor, my head basketball coach, I think recognized that I understood the game pretty well. Mm-hmm. And so he asked me, he said, now I'd like to have you think about when you get through playing ball here of becoming my assistant. Not a grad assistant or part-time, but his full-time right-hand man. And so my dad's friends and people that were looking out for my best interest just say, Sharm, if you want to do anything like this, you can't pass this up.
What an
because
opportunity.
That's right. There's very few opportunities like that. You better take it and just forgo the baseball.
Hmm. Interesting. So that you did take that, and in 19 through 57 would be your first year as an assistant coach,
right,
with Bucky, and then in 58. And then you came into the leadership role in probably a life-changing way. One of your guys that's a mentor for you brought you up into the ranks, and at 24 years old, 1958, Bucky O'Connor gets killed in a car crash, and you become the head coach for Iowa basketball.
You know, the Lord has different ideas for your life than you have. It was set up when I graduated from Iowa after playing baseball and basketball. I would be the assistant basketball coach at Iowa for about 6 years. The baseball coach was going to retire in 6 years, and I was an assistant baseball coach also, that I would then become head baseball coach. And then if Bucky O'Connor became an athletic director or something like that, the overall plans were that I would then go from baseball to back to basketball, which was really what I enjoyed coaching the most.
Yeah. Well, as a coach in basketball, you didn't necessarily have the same continued success year after year that you did as a player. Is that hard to go through? I mean, coming from being in an organization where you did win the Big Ten twice in a row, and then being as a coach, knowing that you got the smarts, knowing that you really had a good caliber team, but maybe what was the element that might have been missing there?
That is a great question, because you're not going to have championship teams every single year. We had a group of guys that came together as freshmen, and it was one of the best group of freshmen that had ever been at Iowa. And we stayed together. In fact, 7 out of the 8 of our top players graduated in 4 years, which is doesn't happen too often. They go 5, or some don't even graduate. And the other one, it was 7 out of 8, and the 8th one had to go to summer school. But so we really all graduated in our time. In 1952, the Olympics would take the NCAA winner, and then they would take an all-star team from the armed forces. And when we were freshmen, we were good enough that we started thinking in 52 about 1956 Olympics, okay, we're going to shoot for winning the NCAA championship so that we would have a representation to play for the Olympics. In the meantime, the rules changed a little bit, so it wasn't that they wouldn't take one full team. But it was neat to see a group of guys who got along real well, had good success, that back even as freshmen had goals to make the Olympics, win the NCAA, and then play in the Olympics.
Hmm. Amazing. And, you know, actually speaking of that, too, is that You had a very successful team, and I didn't mean to detract from that at all, because the fact that you didn't get the Final Four, you know, win the big ring, anything like that, the way the community embraced you as a coach spoke volumes about your team and the character that you instilled, the values that you instilled in these players, the integrity of those men that were on the court. The community in Iowa loved you. Yeah. And still talk about you. I mean, if you get on blog sites and forums throughout the web, they're always talking about Sharm Sherman. What was it that you did different in that community, aside from the court, off the court, that started to leave a legacy in Iowa?
Well, you know, what we're doing with Basketball Club International, which I'm sure we're going to get into yes. later on, but our team was a team of integrity and high character. We didn't get into a lot of trouble. We weren't troublemakers. We went to class. We got decent grades. And this is what we're trying to get back into basketball sometimes. Sometimes and I'm getting a little bit off on a tangent here.
It's all right.
But we had a good, back in the 50s, you know, Tom Brokaw's book about, was it the 50s that he talks about a great generation.
Yeah.
We played and grew up at the high school and college level in a great generation. And I think that the moral values and character and that carried over into our team, and we just kind of elaborated, grew on that. That was our base. And it was neat to see, I guess. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question 100%.
No, you are, though. It is. It goes right back to the morals that were instilled upon you. So let's address that. Now, did you grow up in a family that brought you up in the church? I know you're a Christian man. You love the Lord. Was that something that came from your parents?
I was brought up in the church, Augustana Lutheran Church, in the confines of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. And yes, I was a Christian, but I really didn't know what it was all about. Mm. I mean, yes, if you were to say, Sharm, are you a Christian? Absolutely. But boy, don't ask me too many questions beyond that, because I wouldn't have been able to answer them. And it wasn't until, gosh, in my 30s and 40s that it really hit me, that God really took a hold of me and said, come on back. Not that I had gone too far
sure.
away, but I just wasn't on the same page with him.
Yeah. Was there a moment that defined that for you, where you recognized his authority and lived in reverence to who Christ is?
All right. Now we're getting into pretty deep stuff with me. Sure. And that's fine. I was married. I married a college sweetheart. Mm-hmm. She was kind of a campus queen, and I had, you know, I was some sort of an athlete and all that. And we were married for 19 years and had the three children with them. And without going into detail, we kind of drifted apart. And so she asked for a divorce after 19 years. And it was during that time, from the divorce, I was single for 7 years, that I really was looking at myself again, looking at Jesus, looking at that there had to be more to my faith than just kind of a surface faith. Mm. And so during that time, I vowed during that time, the 7 years, that I was not going to remarry until I remarried a born-again Christian girl. Mm. And it worked out. I got married. And it was at that time, your question was there a defining moment? Carl Kane was an All-American at Iowa. He was a black from Freeport, Illinois, and he and I were good friends. And he was, I don't think he'd mind if I'd say this, because I've heard him give his testimony. Mm-hmm. But his life was kind of a mess. I mean, he was, let's say, straying quite a bit. And he was even thinking suicide at one time.
Wow.
And his sister led him to the Lord in a big time way. So then after that happened, I was still single, and Carl would say to me, he'd say, you know, Sharm, you've been a Christian. I've known that, and I've always looked up to you and this and that. But he said, he wants all of your life. He doesn't just want part of it. He doesn't want a drawer in your dresser. that you pull out when you need him or something. Yeah. And I said, I know, Carl, but not quite yet. I wasn't quite ready to give my life to him. And he'd stay with me. He'd say, are you thinking more now about giving your whole life to him? Yeah, but it's coming. And so it was at that time I wasn't going to remarry until I had done that. So my second marriage then in 19, gosh, I can't remember the date. We've been married almost 27 years. And it was at that time. And I remember getting down on my knees in my bedroom. One time, okay, Lord, I've played games with you. I walked both sides of the street. I'm finally ready to say, okay, Lord, take my life. And at that same time, I was going to marry Kathy. Huh. So there was kind of a defining moment, but it was a gradual one. It wasn't a bolt of lightning out of the blue.
That's great. And it's great that the way that the Lord can bring us back sometimes through friends or just the accountability factor with Him alone, where you have to recognize where He is and where He wants to be. It is a relationship that He desires with us 100%.
Absolutely.
So that's a good thing. Well, from there, the story gets, it's got some interesting turns,
yes,
along the way, and it's all part of where we're at now. You, at some point in your last, how long ago did BCI start? Let's ask you that.
Okay. Started BCI about 5 years ago.
Okay.
5 years ago in September. Mm. And I had been with, first of all, after graduating, I was coach for 6 years. And by the way, I had a winning record at Iowa.
Yes.
There was a change in athletic directors. And the athletic director who had hired me and I were very, very close. And there was a big, big fight between the football coach and the athletic director. And I supported the athletic director during this big internal fight. And he lost.
Hmm.
So the football coach became athletic director, and I had bet on the wrong horse. I had bet on I had supported. And so he just thought he wanted his own people in there. And I was under him for 4 years, and it was tough. It
yeah.
was not not easy. Right now, we're friends. I mean, the athletic director who became athletic director and I are friends. So time heals things.
Sure.
But anyway, he wanted someone else in there. And so one thing led to another, and I finally got out of coaching. I wasn't fired, but it just was, I was not going to win with that friction there between the athletic director and myself. So then I went into real estate for over 20 years, had a real estate company in Iowa City, started doing some development out here with a former teammate, Bill Seberg, and we did some real estate things. And then it was a tough time during the 80s. Interest rates went very, very high. I don't know if you people that will be listening that would be more my age will remember when interest rates hit 16, 18, 20%, and you don't get much sold. Right now, why, you know, the difference between 6.25% or 5.75% is a big thing.
Yeah.
Well, when you have a standard of 16 or 18 or 20%.
For good credit.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That was the lower you could get.
Yeah.
And so it got real, real tough. I joined Athletes in Action. I was asked to join Athletes in Action, which is the athletic arm of Campus Crusade for Christ. And I was asked to take one of their summer teams overseas. Mm. And I said, I can't. I'm in business and, you know, et cetera. And so about 5 months, or not 5 months, that was right away, they had to have a decision. So I took a team in... I think it was 89 or 90, took a team just out of college kids, a couple college kids and then those that had just graduated. And we went over to Poland and Greece.
Hmm.
And for about a month, we played, I think we played 9 games. And I came back and I told Kathy, my wife, I said, this was the most memorable month of my life.
Wow.
Even championships and all of this, but this was meaningful, where you would take a team of 10 who were either believers or close or searching or what have you. And it was just phenomenal. But that was just a one-shot deal.
Hmm.
And so about 2 years, year and a half later, the head of Athletes in Action came through, and I'd become friends, and he took Kathy and me out to eat for pizza. And about halfway through the thing, he said, I'd like to challenge you, Sharm, to come with us full time. And I, my first reaction was, I'm a businessman. I'm not, I don't know anything about what's going on. And he said, I want you to pray about it. He said, I want you and Kathy to pray about this. And okay, I will, but I, that wasn't in my projected future.
Right.
4 months later, there I was with with Athletes in Action. I was with them between 12 and 13 years.
Wow.
As head coach and also general manager for Athletes in Action. Some great experiences.
I bet. Now I know that their rule now is that in order for the husband to be involved or on staff, the wife also has to be. Was that the same back then?
Not exactly,
okay.
But Kathy was. She wasn't on staff, but she was involved with me.
Sure.
So it really wasn't quite that strict at that time.
But out of those experiences, you at some point decided you wanted to develop your own group and your group of players. So how does BCI is Basketball Club International? How does that start?
Okay.
And, I mean, I'd like to, you know, you wish you were a fly on the wall in those discussions. Hey, Kathy, I think I want to do this thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes in ministry, that's hard with our families. Was it hard for you, or was it a decision that both of you just said, you know what, that's a great idea?
The decision was this. We saw that basketball overseas was getting better and better and better.
Hmm.
Back in when AIA was first formed, they were the only show in town.
Yeah.
There weren't any European leagues that were any good. There weren't any leagues here in the States outside of the AAU, but Athletes in Action was the only one who actually paid their players to play, and they had some good ball players that were had a heart for the Lord, but as basketball progressed, and I got involved with Athletes in Action. So did international basketball. Hmm. South America, Europe, Australia, no matter where you go, well, you find that they were getting better and better and better. The United States did a good job of teaching basketball around the world. And it's kind of come back to bite them a little bit because they are good enough now. And I could see that here's Athletes in Action. And as our opposition overseas got better and better and better. Pretty soon, we couldn't keep up with them. And so I saw a real need that we needed to have a... I don't like to use the word ministry, and because people put you in a box.
Yeah.
We wanted to have some influence. We wanted to have some impact. And we wanted to bring character, integrity, and our faith and values back into basketball. And it was a little hard to do with AIA because during that time, the NCAA said that club teams, we were classified as a club team, and we could not play anymore. The NCAA said, okay, there were some bad things going on with the AAU. Mm-hmm. Illegal recruiting, maybe some paybacks, some money changing hands that shouldn't have been. And so finally the NCAA said, okay, we're not going to allow any... club or non-university teams playing against our colleges anymore.
Hmm.
And so then that also put a great big void for AIA. And it was at that time that Kathy and I decided to start our own, where we would try to really emphasize impacting higher level basketball. In fact, there's a verse, and it's Isaiah. I know it's in, let's see, it's Isaiah. And it goes like this, whether you look to the right or the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way you should go.
Hmm.
And Kathy and I prayed on that specific verse, and we were led to leave Athletes in Action, which is an outstanding group, believe me.
Sure.
But yet I saw a niche that I thought we could meet, address. Hmm. And so that's how we started Basketball Club International.
Well, and it took off. And it's been, I mean, I've personally seen the video you know, promotional pieces that come out of China,
yeah,
and your travels all around the world with Basketball Club International. And there's some remarkable things happening with that. And I know, you'd, like you said, you don't call it a ministry. It does put you in a box. But you are able to witness to people who might not expect the vehicle of sport to bring the gospel to them.
Basketball is a hook.
Yeah.
If I can be blunt, it's a flagship station. People will come. If you'd say we're going to have a church meeting, well, not a lot of kids maybe are going to go for that who are not involved in the church. Mm-hmm. You say we're going to have a basketball game with some high level athletes, you're going to get a lot of people that you want to reach. We don't want to preach completely all of the choir.
Sure.
We want to share. And I don't like to say we put it under I don't want to say that we put it under subterfuge or anything like that.
Sure.
We are a Christian ministry basketball team, right on the headlines. We're a professional basketball team composed of followers of Jesus. And we want to bring integrity and character and values, and then including that is our faith.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it in that, so it kind of all comes together, because the people we want, or the kids that we want to impact or to have an influence on, are going to come because of the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And the better basketball we are, the more influence we are going to have. For instance, the Nuggets. If the Nuggets are playing 500 ball, you know, they're a pro team, and it's okay. But here they are in the playoffs, or when they get to the playoffs, why, everybody and their dogs are following,
yeah,
the Nuggets, because they're winning. Well, that's why we want to take as high a grade of basketball player and team as we can, because it will attract.
That's right. Well, and by even teaching the character integrity in the sport, you mold individuals into people who can become vessels and can actually be open to hearing something that makes sense, instead of, you know, just closed-minded and looking for the, you know, what we see as the common pro basketball player now. And I see that happening through again, some of those videos I've seen. It's amazing how kids follow these guys that you bring over there and look at them. I know you do camps as well. And I do want to talk about that real quick, just about the camps, but then I do want to touch on something else that's come up in the last couple of years and where that takes a turn a little bit in your life. But let's address the camps with BCI now. You mm-hmm. do some basketball camps. Do you do those globally, or is that something you just do here?
We will do, sometimes when you're traveling a lot overseas, we can't do really camps. We call them appearances. Mm-hmm. So we'll go and we'll have, if we're playing in an evening in China, for instance, and if we get there early enough, we'll go at 3 o'clock to a school, and we will put on just a little mini camp clinic type of thing. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is just being there. We don't teach basketball that much because we don't have time to put on a full day's clinic or something like that. But it's just being there. And they look at us and they can tell that we're different. We get asked this so often. When we take our teams overseas, why are you different? You're different than a lot of teams who have come over here and played. Hmm. What makes you different? Why are you doing it? And this sometimes opens the doors. Even in China, we can share our faith a little bit. Well, we're over here because we love basketball. We love little kids or younger kids, and we're also here because of our faith in Jesus. That is our motivating factor for actually playing. Now, we can't go have altar calls or anything like that by any means, but they know that we're different, and they can see. Look, let me give you an illustration. About 3 years ago, we were in China. We got into a big, they call them villages. Well, it's 2 million people, I think it was, and we get into the place, and they radio ahead and say we're ahead of schedule, so we could do an appearance. And so they call back, yeah, okay, if we can get here by 3:30, well, we'll have the school there. So I said to our interpreter, about how many kids are you going to expect? And he said, he didn't know, because he was traveling with us. He didn't know the city. He said, oh, probably 30 or 40 or maybe 50. Well, so I sent half of our team back to the hotel because we've been on the bus all day. sent them back to the hotel to rest. So we only took half of our team. We get off the bus, and there are over 1,000 kids at this big, big school. And they just climb all over us. And all we do is come out into their courtyard, and, you know, we shoot a few baskets with them, but you can't do anything because the kids are just swarming all over the court. And it was one of the great experiences of my life to see how these myriads of kids would just climb all over our basketball players. Okay, the conclusion of the story. We won that night. Okay? And so they had a little celebration for us. The mayor of this 2 million city. And over in China, it looks like they drink gasoline, you know, when they give toasts and that. And, you know, so they were toasting us. And so the mayor, through an interpreter, said this. He said, I want to compliment the BCI basketball team and their presence and for coming to our city. But more importantly, we could tell how your players loved our kids by the look in their eyes. And I'll tell you, even now when I tell that story, and I've told it 30 times over the years, why the hairs on my arms still stand up. Because just by who we are, they can tell that there's something different about us. And that's what we try to do.
That's a remarkable story. And it means that BCI is a success. Because it's doing what it is that you want it to do, for sure. So through all that, and knowing that now you're in a place where that's comfortable and it's good, there's been some hard times recently. And I get your newsletter, and I do want to read one comment in your newsletter. It's a short paragraph, and then I want to open it up for you to talk about.
Sure.
And it says, sooner or later, most of us face a crisis of this sort. We come up against something we cannot control. Kathy and I faced our own particular brand of difficulty this past year. In April, I began chemotherapy for prostate cancer. The cancerous cells had spread beyond my prostate, and my treatment was aggressive and tough. After the first 6 weeks of my chemo, my doctors were able to start alleviating some of the side effects, and now as I come to the end of the treatment, I'm feeling well aside from a big loss of energy. I am thankful for this. It's been a challenging year, and feeling better is a big reason to give thanks. I'm going to leave it there. There's more, and I would encourage other people to kind of read into this story a little bit, but I want to let you do it. This is right before Thanksgiving 08 that you wrote this newsletter. So I want to address the cancer itself, where you're at,
sure,
how things are going, how's Kathy doing with it?
Well, the cancer was discovered, and it had grown out of the prostate. It had spread a little bit into the, it metastasized, I think is the word, on the bone. And that was about 4.5 years ago that happened. Mm. And so I did go through chemo, some pretty intense chemo. And that's an understatement.
Yeah.
Because it was brutal. And like you just read, why they were able to modify it a little bit and make some changes and to take care of the side effects better. And it's been now about 4 years. And so right now, I still have cancer. The PSA, which is one of the gauges, is still quite high. But it's surprising. I feel I've got 80 to 90% of the energy that I had. And I don't have side effects. I'm not, and I won't go into a lot of the sick part of it, but it was bad there for a while. And right now, I'm leading a normal life, I think. I still have to wash myself. I don't have the strength. And sometimes in the afternoons, it just feels good to maybe lie down on the bed.
Yeah.
I don't have to get in the bed, but sometimes just to get off my feet. Then I also got a blood clot, which makes it a little tougher, and so I have to have shots for that to keep the blood blood thin. But I'll tell you what I've learned is that I've had a very positive life. The pluses have outweighed the minuses.
Mm-hmm.
There is a verse in 1 Thessalonians 5, and it's 16, 17, or 18. I think it's 18. And it says this, in everything, give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. And it doesn't say for everything. I'm not going to be thanking him for the cancer. But if I'm having it, I can thank him in it.
Yeah.
Because he gives me the strength and the attitude that you can handle it. And if you've given your life, like before I got married 27 years ago, for the second time, when I said, okay, Lord, take my life, well, I can't just give him parts of my life. I've got to give him all my life. I've got to give him the cancer part of it. I've got to give him the downside as well as the good side. And so, therefore, my attitude, I think, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but my attitude has been great. And if he takes me tomorrow, okay, Lord, my life's in your hands. If he takes me tomorrow, I'm going to be in a great place very shortly. But I think he's got some more things for me to do. Basketball, God's given me talents, like the parable of the talent. If I wasn't doing something in basketball, I think there'd be something wrong. I would not be utilizing. I'd be burying my talents. Hmm. And he gave me a background in basketball and some contacts and a love for the game that I can use that then for his glory. As a young minister told me one time, he says, what did he say? I want to increase the population of heaven. And I thought that was just kind of a neat way to do it. And we, through our basketball team and that, not only are we encouraging our players to grow deeper in their faith and encouraging that, but then to spread out and then to encourage others and share their faith, to give back to basketball, because that's a talent God's given them, so that they can use that talent for his glory.
Hmm. You know, I was gonna lead in to ask you if you would give some encouragement to somebody who may be going through cancer and things like that, but I think you just did that, and I appreciate that.
Oh, sure. But you have to have a faith. If you don't have a faith, when the going gets tough, where do you go?
Yeah.
I mean, you can hope, and in fact, this is getting off a little bit on a tangent. Our faith is built, there's a lot of hope in our faith. To me, for the non-believer, for someone who doesn't really know the Lord, hope is kind of a wish,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have any substance. Hope for the Christian, for the follower of Jesus, is a promise.
That's right.
It's a promise. So it's different depending where you are coming from. So I would just say to anyone who is going through some tough times, everybody's not going to be healed. We're not all going to be around here for 300 years. But yet while we're going through it, like in 1 Thessalonians, in everything, give thanks and continue to follow him. And to me, it's really attitude. Now, if the cancer gets worse and something like that, it probably will be a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But yet, I think attitude has a lot to do with your success in your health too. So.
Yeah, I think so. How's Kathy doing with all that?
Oh, she's great. She had breast cancer, but they caught it very early. In fact, it was 2 months after they found my prostate.
Wow.
But they caught hers very early, and she's been fine.
Hmm.
And the Lord's blessed me unbelievably with a wife like Kathy. And not only as a wife, but she is so much involved with what we're doing with BCI.
Yeah.
I'm kind of an upfront guy, and I got ideas and this and that, and she makes sure that the details are taken care of, and she doesn't let me get too far out there without, here, we've got to make sure we do this. So it's really a team effort.
That's a great blessing. I recognize that in my own wife, too. I'm so blessed. Way out of my league, beyond measure, and thankful for that, too.
As long as we're thankful for it.
Yeah.
And don't take them for granted. Don't take
That's
twice
right.
for granted.
That's right. You know, going through all that, do you pay much attention, as much attention to college level basketball now, or are you so focused in with BCI that it's a little harder to pay attention to what's going on?
I still follow it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to enough Final Fours that it isn't that, like for instance, the doctors thought maybe I shouldn't go to the Final Four this year.
Yeah.
And so I didn't. And I've been to a number of them. But yes, I still follow it. Maybe not quite as much as when I was with Athletes in Action, because we were recruiting and playing against the Indianas and the Kentuckys and the Louisvilles and the Stanfords and the Iowas and what have you. So I don't follow it quite as close. But yet I will go to the first NBA tryout camp that they have right after the Final Four. And that's where they take the, well, excluding the ones that the pros know are going to be in the top round picks. Kind of the second level. And I was there at in Virginia, at Portsmouth, Virginia. And there I meet some college kids. And I try to find the ones who might have a Christian leaning or what have you. In fact, this is just something that we do every Friday during that tournament. It's a four-day tournament. And I usually try to have a little half-hour, 45-minute fellowship group for some of the players. In fact, I had there were three NBA executives who scouts or executives who came, and so we just had a little Good Friday. It was on Good Friday this year, and so we had a little Good Friday in a real secular players trying to impress the scouts, and the scouts are finding out about the players, and it's agents are around. I mean, it's a kind of a madhouse, and we take time out, and I think we had eight or nine people who came to this just a little half-hour, 45-minute session on Good Friday, just getting them back so that that their feet are grounded, that this weekend, this week that they're playing and trying to do the best they can and impress the scouts, that there's really more to life than just that.
Yeah. I bet that would be a great place to be. See some great basketball, some great players, and obviously with an opportunity like that, you get to watch some character come out in those guys. I'd say the reason I had led into that about how involved you get in college basketball is to this day, and I would pose this to you because I would like to talk to any coach about this on the college level, and that's that, you know, I love watching the NBA finals. The NBA definitely raises up to a new level. Their game changes, everything changes. But in every sport that I watch, and I watch them all, why is it that in March, college basketball on every level elevates beyond where you would ever think these players could play? And how many games come down to that last second shot in college basketball? And that's the only sport it happens. What is your take on that?
Well, first of all, college basketball is still somewhat... how do I want to say it? It's still kind of youthful. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gotten into the professional level yet. It's still amateur basketball, and some people could argue that it's not as much amateur as it was, and I'll grant you that. Mm-hmm. But there's still school spirit. And you get the Dukies and the North Carolinas and all that, whoever makes it, the tournaments, the schools behind them, and I'm not even sure how I want to say it. There's a certain fervor for college basketball. And it's almost like it was 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago that it's my alma mater is playing. I'm proud of my alma mater. And so it's more so than maybe a pro team. And so I think it's going to stay that way. And we could get into the pros and cons, which would be another long session of the pros and cons of where basketball or where professional sports are going. That's one of the reasons, getting back to BCI, we're trying to put a little more of that integrity and values back into basketball, back into the players, and along with their faith. And we're trying to say that when you talk about integrity and character and values, faith has to come in there, or you've got a big void in that whole area.
Absolutely. Sharm, I think, you know, there are a couple different issues we could probably start on right now, and we wouldn't finish for several hours. So I think with that, going through it, I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you so much in taking the time to visit with me and do it here, and I look forward to having some opportunities to catch up with you more about BCI and where you're at, and we'll make sure that our viewers get to connect with BCI as well. In fact, when people want to check you out, can you just throw the website out there?
Sure.
We know it's
I will repeat it a couple times.
Yes, please.
It's bciedge.org. BCI, which stands for Basketball Basketball Club International.
Uh-huh.
I keep thinking Basketball Congress. Basketball Club International. And then our team name is Edge.
Okay.
And we're the Edge because we want to be out on the edge. If we're going to be working with young people, you can't do it the way I did it back so many years ago. You've got to be current. And so we are bciedge.org.
Okay.
And they can get a good, we've got a good website. And can the sky's the limit as to what we can do and the impact we can have on lives.
Thanks so much, Charm. Well, I want to thank you all for tuning in and watching this great show about a legacy with Charm Sherman. And encourage you to check out Basketball Club International, bciedge.org, and also stay with us on 1615.tv to keep connected with guys like this. I appreciate you joining us. Charm, thanks again.
Thank you.